Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Christmas edition of the Third Option Podcast.
Ho, ho, ho.
Merry Christmas.
And today we have a special guest with us, Nathan's wife, Heather.
Hi, everyone.
We thought we'd bring some joy to our Christmas
That's
podcast
right.
before we ruin
Liven it
all
up.
Of your hopes and dreams. Because today the name of today's podcast is the top five lies you may believe about Christmas.
Doesn't
that bring joy to your heart?
Oh no.
In this joyous season.
It's gonna ruin it.
We'll try not to ruin it too bad, because there's actually hope in this message too. And there's truth in this message that maybe we need to all embrace. So I get to start this one out. Because this one's not like a super like biblical heavy podcast, I don't think Nathan really knew what to talk about. So we had to look up a lot of like there's a lot of history, historical facts, and but we're gonna do a countdown today. The countdown from 5 to 1. We start out with
number 5.
That's right, number 5.
Number 5.
Number 5 on our list, and that is the Christmas tree is pagan.
Oh man.
Now, has any of you ever heard that?
Of course, that's the big thing, right?
Yep.
I've never heard it till this year.
Oh, yeah? Really?
I know.
No, I've heard that. I've heard that's your life.
This is my truth, and I'm going to live out my truth.
Okay. You're on the wrong podcast, so you should probably get off.
Now, I'm going to try to tell the story of Boniface.
Is there a T in that?
Boniface, you're right. It's Boniface.
I'm looking at Nathan's screen
This is why we brought Heather. I told her she was going to criticize
us. Heather's here to criticize us and then call us out.
That's awesome. So here's the story of Boniface. The story of Boniface kind of is the story of the Christmas tree and where it all started, where they believe the Christian tradition started. So the story of the Christmas tree is part of a story of the life of Saint Boniface. Saint Boniface was born about the year of 680 in Devonshire, England. Boniface traveled to Germany through the Alps, into Bolivia, and then into Hesse and Thuringia. In 722, the Pope consecrated Saint Boniface as a bishop with jurisdiction over all of Germany. He knew that his greatest challenge was to eradicate pagan suspicions which hindered the acceptance of the gospel and the conversion of the people. He would continue to preach the gospel until he was martyred in 754. He encountered some pagans who were about to sacrifice a child at the base of a huge oak tree. He cut down the tree to prevent the sacrifice, and the fir tree grew up at the base of the oak. He then told everybody that the lovely evergreen, with its branches pointed to heaven, was a holy tree, the tree of the Christ child, and the symbol of his promise of eternal life. So that was kind of a really shortened version of this story. So this group of, what were they, like?
Yeah, it'd be like monks and stuff, but they're missionaries because there is this mission movement to try to bring Christianity to the German tribes, and everything was very tribal back then. And so Boniface is kind of leading this effort for the Pope, and he comes upon, you know, this tribe out in the woods at night, and the situation happens there. They believe Thor lives in this oak tree and can't be defeated.
Thor from the Avengers, Thor?
That's right.
Yeah.
Thor. And cuts it down and proves that, you know, their God isn't as powerful as they think he is. And then gives that the opportunity to talk about Jesus and using the pine tree as a symbol, because it's always green, and so that represents eternal life.
Right.
And the branches, you know, pointing is to direct us towards heaven, where the true God lives. You know, is sort of the point to that. And then brung it to the hall of the tribe, because Vikings, those types of tribes, would have one main central building to where, like, the king and everybody would gather in the village as sort of like a feast, big feast area. And that's where they put the first, I guess, Christmas tree, you know. But that's where the tradition,
said to have started,
yeah.
And I know when the secular historians talk about the pagan part of it, it's way later.
Yeah.
It's European tradition from like the 15th, 18th century.
Yeah.
So this is definitely a lot earlier than that. This is like 700 to 800 AD. So it's pretty cool. I found another part of this where they kind of contribute. The Christmas tree came from the Reformation with Martin Luther.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that one Christmas Eve, about the year 1500, he was walking through the snow-covered woods and was struck by the beauty of the snow-glistened trees. Their branches, dusted with snow, shimmered in the moonlight. When he got home, he set up a small fir tree and shared the story with children. He decorated the Christmas tree with small candles, which he lighted in honor of Christ's birth. So he actually took this tradition. I don't know if he actually knew the story of Boniface at the time, but some people point back to Martin Luther is one of the early Christmas tree people who set up a Christmas tree kind of in their houses.
Yeah. So yeah, the idea that, you know, the Christmas tree is pagan or like something like that has no basis whatsoever.
None.
Even the passage, the obscure cherry-picked passage in Jeremiah, it's talking about making idols in the context.
Yeah.
One's talking about making them from stone, and then one's making them from metal, and then one's making them from wood. And people cherry pick the one verse and say, this has to do with a Christmas tree, which, you know, there's a lot of things wrong with that.
Right.
That type of
pine trees in the Middle
East? There's a lot of things wrong with that type of thought. But yeah, the Christmas tree is a symbol, you know, that a missionary used. And so, you know, when you're putting up your Christmas tree, I think that's a really cool message.
Absolutely.
You know, to teach your kids and stuff like that, that, you know, people from Europe, we used to be from tribes who didn't know Christ. And this was a symbol used by the missionaries who first came to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why we have it to this day. And I think that's something pretty cool to share with your kids and family, you know, around Christmas time.
All right, guys. We're going to move on to
Number four.
That's right. Our number four Christmas lie. The Three Kings. So, there's a song.
Oh, man.
Does anybody know how to sing it? Anybody know the song?
Heather can sing it.
She's a singer. Really well.
She's a singer. Oh, my word.
Oh, come on, Heather. Anyway, there's a song about the three kings of Orient R.
Yep.
Orient R?
Yeah.
Well, it's like we three kings of Orient R. Like, we are the kings.
We three kings of Orient.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so there's that song about we three kings. Well, what do we know? There's no kings.
There's no kings.
There's never been kings. So what do we know? There was these
magi,
right?
Yep. It's magi.
And what did they bring? They brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So that means there was three magi, right? Well, actually, we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know how many magi there was. There could have been 100 magi. There could have been a million magi. Probably was. Probably not. So the Greek word for this magi is magos. I think I said that right. Magos.
Yep.
And really, what were magi? I mean, I believe they were like magicians. Or like astrologers?
Yeah, they were the wise, learned men of their time.
Okay.
And so these would be people who would be in government, you know, but they would be relied upon for, you know, discerning what the future would tell or what action should be taken, especially in the East, in Semitic cultures. And so these magi come from the East.
Yeah.
Probably Babylon or somewhere in that area or Persia. And they come over to bring these gifts. And so there's significance kind of in who they are. They're people who are like watching, you know, the workings of everything, of the universe. You know, they're studying the stars and what they're telling. And so these men come up to this child, you know, to look for this king of the Jews. And so, yeah, that's why they're looking after the star and stuff. They're astrologers. But, yeah, yeah. No kings. They are not kings. They are not rulers or something.
So they also, they showed up during Jesus' birth, right? That's probably wrong,
couple years later.
Probably. Definitely. Well, that's the great debate. That's the debate. I almost called you Simon, sorry. Nathan and I had a debate on that one where what I studied was they came a couple years later. But actually, you think it's earlier.
Yeah, I think it could be earlier. They weren't there when Jesus was born, most likely. You know, that's probably not when they came. Because they're kind of pictured there in the manger with the shepherds and stuff. It's sort of the picture that we see. But that doesn't really make sense with the two stories. They don't. The whole shepherd scenario's in Luke. And the Magi is in Matthew, and they don't have, you know, each other in their stories, in their accounts. So the idea of those two groups being there at the same time seems kind of, you know, iffy.
So you're saying I need to destroy our wise men that came with our nativity.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
We should probably burn
them out in a couple of years.
Yep. But yeah, I'm thinking within a 41-day window.
Okay.
The reason being, there are ceremonial laws that they're following after Jesus is born in Luke, and then they leave Bethlehem and return to Nazareth.
Yeah.
And so that sort of doesn't... So then you would have to make up some other reason why they came back to Bethlehem for these wise men. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
Traveling in this time is dangerous, for one thing. You know, very dangerous. There's lots of robbers that are out all over the place. And, you know, Jesus and his family aren't necessarily people who would have means for protection on their travels and stuff like that. So it's kind of risky to take your wife and your child, you know, on this long trip, you know. Cool. To this other place. And so that's sort of some of the reason why it seems a little odd that they would come back and be in Bethlehem, you know, 2 years later for this to happen.
Well, they saw the star.
Yep, they saw the star.
The star was during the birth, right?
Yeah, show them where the child was.
I guess the other theory then... Is it they took them 2 years or they didn't travel for a while? Like, I mean, I'm just curious of, like, where the 2 years comes from or, like, why is it people think there was possibly 2 years versus the 41-day window?
That has to do with when Herod, you know, searches out the kids in Bethlehem and he orders to kill any kid 2 years old and under.
So that's where they get the number from.
Yeah, and then they flee to Egypt.
Yeah.
Okay, and wait out Herod's death. And then they return.
Gotcha.
And so it's a little weird.
I have a question. Yep. Because I don't have my Bible right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Did they follow the star for the star's sake, or did they really know that, like, Christ was at the end of their journey?
Yeah, they know that the star is, like, pointing to
something.
Yeah. Well, they know it's leading to the King of the Jews.
Oh, okay.
They do know that. You know, whether they know who Jesus is and all that stuff is different story, but yeah.
That was a good question.
Good
Heather.
Question, Heather.
Thanks for joining us, Heather.
I forgot. Sorry.
You're really living up this conversation because that was very good. All right. So guess what we're moving on to? That was number four, and now it's
Number three.
That's right. We're at number three.
Number three.
Number three of our top five list of Christmas lies. And number three is, where was Jesus born? Now, we all know it was Bethlehem, the city.
Yep.
That one's a pretty easy one. Mm-hmm. We can all agree on that. But the question is where was the location in Bethlehem?
Where was the location?
Where was Jesus born? Nathan, where was he born in Bethlehem?
Well, sort of like, when do the Magi appear and all that stuff. We don't, like, 100% know. Right, we don't 100% know when they come. What we know generally, it has to happen about this area of time. But same thing with where Jesus was born. You have some ideas. People have ideas as to where he would be born. But the most likely scenario, according to Semitic culture and these different factors of where they're at and location and stuff like that, context. They going back for the census reason. So Joseph obviously has family and kin in Bethlehem, because that's why, you know, he returns and goes back. And so when you would enter a city, you would say what your genealogy is. So I am, you know, Joseph, son of such and such, son of such and such. And people would know who you were. And they would say, okay, well, your relative is right here. So you go see them. And due to the, you know, from the ancient Israel laws on, this is the way things work. Your family is obligated to come and take care of you. And so this is deeply entrenched into their way of thinking and mindset. And so what wouldn't happen is our view of, when I'm traveling, I go stay at a hotel, you know, and we are in inn-type situation where I don't know anybody, and we go pay some money to somebody, and I stay in my own individual room, you know, in a big building. That's not what would be going on or be happening. And so they would go to their closest relative, and you would go into what would probably be, you know, a peasant's house. And back then, you know, they had a two-level small house, and the first level is where they would keep their animals. And we think that's kind of weird to have, like, your sheep and goats and stuff inside your house, but that's what they did. And their houses back then were built out of stone. They don't have a lot of trees or wood-type resources, and so everything's built out of rock, because they have a lot of rock. And so it's built out of stone, and they would have their kitchen down there with the animals, and then you would climb upstairs, and the second floor would be kind of where sleeping or other areas like eating and stuff like that, or what the sort of like what women would be working on and textiles and stuff like that. And then on the roof is actually where people would often hang out too. They would have flat roofs, unlike where we live in Michigan, where you have to have a pointed roof and stuff like that. They would utilize their roofs a lot.
Dude, we need to bring back the flat roofs. That'd be cool.
It wouldn't work to be for us.
No, I know. But wouldn't it be neat to be able to be outside and like that?
In their climate, the it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. So in a way, they have three levels to their house, because everybody utilized the roof. And so anyways, when there's no room for them, okay? Now, the word there isn't like there's no room for them in the inn. That's how it's translated. But the word there is kataluma, which usually is used to talk about a guest room or a spare room, okay? And in some Israelite houses, the guest room would be towards the back of the building, okay, if they had a guest room. Not everybody did, obviously, but if they did, it would be towards the back of the room. So if everybody's coming for the census, everybody's packed into their, you know, kin's house, well, you know, when Joseph and them arrive, there is no spare room, and so they go stay in the, what would be with the animals and that's where they find the feeding trough, the manger, and stuff like that. But that would be in a house. And so in Luke's account, Matthew's account, it'll talk about they're in a house. And so you're kind of conflicted with, wait a second, I thought they were in the stable. You know, well, it's in the same building. Mm-hmm. Because where the animals would be kept is inside the house.
What's weird is lately people have been pointing out this cave thing. And it's like, I wonder where they get that from, the idea of being in a cave.
The cave thing started, because that is, if you go to Israel today, you can take a tour, and they'll take you to this church, and they're like, this is the Church of the Nativity, and this church is built upon the cave where Jesus was born. Well, this was started by Constantine's wife, the empress.
Oh, nice.
She had heard that this cave was where Jesus was born, so Constantine, of course, has a church built over this cave on top of it. And so to this day, pilgrims, you know, everybody takes a tour to go to this place. And so that kind of popularized it. And some of the writers around the 300s there also wrote about, oh, yes, the caves and stuff like that where Christ would be born. So it kind of got popularized since then. But if we're looking at, like, the text and Israelite culture, it does, you know, what seems more logical is that they were in their kin's house. You know.
Yeah, they were just in the pasture.
They were just downstairs.
Where the animals would
where the,
be.
Yeah, they weren't sleeping upstairs, which is where people would usually stay. And they're not just by themselves. Like, a lot of times when you see pictures, they're just alone by themselves.
So we just ruined the nativity scene a little more now. Like, lose the magi, lose the barn feel. Now we're in some crappy room in your house?
Some tiny shanty house.
That's right.
Yep.
Really ruining this.
We're going to get like Barbies and more people to put with our nativity set.
Right.
Random
houses behind. Basically a crowded, fun house, full of your relatives. People are jam-packed to the brim.
That sounds fun.
Having a good time. And then the baby's being born.
That's right. Extended family gathering.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah, poor Mary. All right. So now we move on to
number two.
Yeah, that's right. Number two on our list of the great Christmas lies. And this one is not really biblical at all. This one, this was something I was inspired just to talk about because I grew up in a secular household where we didn't believe in Jesus. So Christmas was about the man in red, Santa Claus.
The man in red.
So once I became a Christian, I noticed a lot of people in church embraced kind of this mixed Santa Claus thing with the man known as Saint Nick, which, there's some truth there to Saint Nick, but there's a lot of legend based around this Saint Nick character. So let's look at who
sounds
is
like satanic. Satanic carrier, Saint Nick.
So let's figure out who is this Saint Nick guy. Now, there's a lot of legend about Saint Nick. And I'm not going to talk a lot about that because you'll hear a lot of stories. Like I heard, you would hear stories of like how he would get presents and stuff for all the kids in town, or he'd have gold sacks and you'd give them to the kids at Christmas, and he would throw them in the chimneys. So there's a lot of like this relation to Santa Claus as we know it.
Yeah.
But really, there's only this 12-page document, as we know, and it's all I could find, that actually talked about the man named Nicholas. So this book was called The Life, Works, and Miracles of Our Holy Father Nicholas, the Archbishop of Myra in Lycia, that can easily be printed on 12 pages. Nicholas was born in 280 AD in Asia Minor. So these are historical writings, but like I said, some of this information is even disputed from these texts.
Okay.
So Nicholas was born in 280 AD in Patara, Asia Minor, which is a harbor city in modern-day Turkey. born into a rich family. He was a very well-behaved child. Nicholas' parents died when he was still young, and the young man started to give away everything he inherited. Nicholas hears about the impoverished man. This is like the story of Nicholas that people kind of relate to Christmas. So Nicholas heard about the impoverished man who was unable to offer a dowry to the men who will marry his three daughters. They were so poor that no man of their order wanted them as his wife. Therefore, their father thought about ordering them to work in the brothel so that he and his family would have some income. Nicholas intervenes and throws purses through the windows to pay for the dowry. This gives the poorest a chance to marry. The father of the girls caught Nicholas in the act, and Saint Nick asked that he tell no one. So the funny thing about this is the fact that how did this story get out? Like, they kind of joke about this. Fact he
did told tell them
to tell no one, but somehow this story is known.
Yeah.
They don't know if Nicholas told somebody or if these people went out and told them.
Yeah.
So paying for the dowry. So these, pretty much this father had no choice because the women, I believe, had to get married. If they didn't. Do you know anything about that, Nathan?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I just know that I've heard this part of St. Nicholas before. That he saved them from like slavery, you know, sex slavery essentially. And I just know that part. I know he was a real, you know, leader in the church and stuff, but that's about it. That's all I know about him.
Okay, So Nicholas developed such a good reputation in his region that he was chosen as the Archbishop of Myra. And that's like a city that was near Patera, which where he was born, when he was in his early 20s. So he was really young when he became a bishop of this area. During his service as Archbishop, a violent persecution of Christians began. Nicholas was almost certainly in prison during this time, and he was likely tortured for his faith. He spent a total of 8 years long in prison. Nicholas of Myra is listed among the bishops in attendance at the meeting. Little could Nicholas have known that his name would be one day recognized than other of the attendants of the council has developed this famous Nicene Creed, which a lot of people have heard of the Nicene Creed.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholas died December 6th, 343 AD. So there's really, that's about it for Nicholas. That's like all the information we know.
Before Christmas, so...
Yeah,
that's right.
He didn't even make it to Christmas. He didn't
make it. And I believe the church, actually, December 6th is the day that he is celebrated. Was celebrated.
Okay.
It was like Nicholas Day. I believe it was December 6th.
Yep.
So the whole tying this together. So here's some similarities between him and Santa Claus. Okay. One, people say, is he wore a red bishop robe? Santa wears red.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any truth there, but hey, why not? So they believe, like, the earliest tradition of Santa Claus was they called him Father Christmas or Old Man Christmas.
Okay.
And they based that loosely off of Nicholas.
Okay.
Saint Nicholas. So this was like a German kind of, or Dutch type tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And they called him like Père Noël in France.
Okay.
And people wanted to tell their kids who delivered gifts. So that's kind of how it started. And they eventually gave him the name in U.S., Kris Kringle. We've heard that before.
Yep.
It was the Dutch who kind of brought it to the U.S. And that's kind of where we get they started using St. Nicholas. So it was kind of that tie-in with St. Nicholas again.
Yeah.
And then we now call it Santa Claus.
Okay.
And so then we go to jolly old St. Nick, Santa Claus. So here's, you know, here's the real problem with Santa. Like, really, that has nothing to do with St. Nick. I mean, what was Santa? He's a big, fat, jolly old man who wore a red suit.
Mm-hmm.
He has magic powers, flies around the world in one night, giving millions of presents to children's, going down their chimney. He judges you for your deeds based on if you're naughty or nice, if you're going to receive gifts. He has godlike powers, knowing what you're doing at all times. He has an army of mythical creatures called elves that make gifts. And he has eight or nine. He only had eight flying reindeer until like 1940. And then Rudolph showed up. And now we have nine flying super magical creatures.
Oh, yes.
That get him around the world in one night.
So it's like, how did he go from the saint-like story to this? It's sort of kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. Where'd the reindeer and elves come from? Like, who's...
Yeah, there was a poem written, I think it was in the 1850s.
Okay.
That's where, like, all that came from. Huh. The reindeers, the elves. But ultimately, yeah, I don't know what it has to do with St. Nick.
Yeah.
There's... I don't know how we got there. It's really strange.
Oh, we got another thing coming.
We do have another thing coming. All right, so this is a quick one. This is
before number one.
This is before number one.
There's something.
We have one more.
Honorable mention.
That's right. We have our honorable mention. I just threw this one in there. So there's this thing about writing the word Xmas as being disrespectful or anti-Christian. Now, have you ever heard that? Like, I've been hearing it lately. Like, it's so bad because it's like crossing Christ out. This is what Franklin Graham said. He's the great religious leader of the church who speaks a lot on political topics. You see him a lot on TV. He said, Xmas is a symbol of a bigger problem with the culture. Not only are we crossing out Christ in the word, they say, but we're tossing him out in the public square. Therefore, Xmas, as Graham said, is a war against the name of Jesus Christ. We're not declaring war. Someone's declaring war. They are. They're declaring war.
The X writers.
Here's the problem.
The X-Men.
Here's the real problem of that. So X used to stand for the word Christ.
It's a beginning letter to Christ. Yes. Christos begins with a Greek letter that is an X. Yep.
Yeah.
And so it would be used as a symbol in the early church. They had, like, lots of secret symbols to write to each other. The fish, you know, people have heard of these before, ichthus and stuff like that. But, yeah, you would write the
chi, like, it's kind of like the Cairo, yeah, mm-hmm. sorry, yes, chi, yep. not chi. You can look it up online, you Google search it, and you'll see what it looked like today. Okay, so now we're going on, this is it. So this is our final one, and that was, this is our... Number one. So let's go.
Number one.
That's right. Our number one lie of Christmas. And that was. And okay, this one. This one everybody knows.
Yeah, it's not everybody that big of. Know.
If you don't everyone. Know this, you. Where have you been? Because I knew this way before I started going to church. This was an obvious one that Jesus was born on Christmas. Jesus was not born on Christmas Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So December 25th is not the day that Jesus was actually born.
Yeah.
But now, what day was he born? Well, there's a lot of speculation on which day that actually was.
Mm-hmm.
Clement, he's kind of an early writer. He picked November 18th.
Oh, the day after my birthday.
Nice. Hippolytus, like a hippopotamus. I don't know. Figured Christ must have been born on a Wednesday.
Obviously.
That's right, obviously. An anonymous document believing to have been written in North Africa around AD 243 placed Jesus' birth on March 28th.
Mm.
So what do we actually know? Well, this was interesting. Someone said Luke 2, 8 through 9. Now there were in the same country shepherds living out in the fields, keeping watch over their flock at night. And behold, an angel of the Lord stood there before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were greatly afraid. So that's it. That tells us everything right now. Yep. It really doesn't tell us anything. but what it tells us is that the shepherds were out in the field with their flock, and people believe if it was wintertime, you wouldn't be out in the field with your flock.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was Halloween, because they were greatly afraid.
Yes. Some people believe that means that it was summer or spring or fall of month, I guess, mm-hmm. because the shepherds were out in the field.
Yeah.
We don't really know for sure, though.
Yeah, it's pretty vague.
It's kind of like right now, my chickens have been outside.
Yeah.
So if I told a story about my chickens being outside, you'd be like, oh, that's summer.
Had to have happened in summertime.
Well, no, it's just really warm right now. So we have no idea. That's
just speculation. Speculate as to
So then is there a problem? I guess that's the... Ask yourself, is that a problem that we celebrate this holiday on December 25th?
No.
Does that really even matter?
Yeah. I don't think very many Christians really think that. You know, that's not really why we celebrate.
And I think we all know that.
Yeah.
If,
I'd say so. So kind of going into why it's on December 25th. And sort of one of the myths out there that's been popularized is, well, the Christian church, they like to copy the pagan Romans on everything. And so all their ideas come from the Romans and what they used to do with their gods. And so a lot of people think that's why Christmas is on December 25th, because the Romans celebrated a sun god around that same time. Now,
we celebrate the son of God.
Boom! Drop the mic.
Now, most scholars today, you know, don't hold to that view at all. People who actually study this and know about Roman culture and history know that that, you know, doesn't hold up very long.
Dude, but Google says otherwise.
Well,
Nathan.
Google's wrong.
The first, like, 20 Google searches say it's pagan. Yeah. End of story, you're wrong.
Two places never to get your history from, History Channel and Google. They create more headaches than you can believe. When you're looking at the calendar there, for one, that festival changes, okay, from year to year. So if they are worshiping the sun, that would be changing all the time. So it doesn't make sense to pick December 25th as the day. So that whole idea, you know, doesn't really mesh. Plus, they had a feast for almost every day of the year, okay, in Roman pagan belief. So it doesn't matter what day Christians picked, it would have been, well, you know why they picked that day is because of such and such god. Well, you know, you're kind of just pegged in there if that's the way it's going to be. But there is a reason as to why they picked December 25th, and it doesn't have to do necessarily with birthdays and stuff like that. And so Christmas kind of came out of a growing Christian calendar. And so as Christianity began to develop and grow, they added more and more feasts and festivals. The beginning ones were, of course, Passover, Easter, and then Pentecost. Those were the two main big ones. And we see those from the apostles and on. So those are very early feasts that took place, along with meeting on Sunday as the Lord's Day. But over time, there developed Epiphany, which today some churches still celebrate Epiphany, which takes place in January 7th, I believe. And Epiphany has to do with anything that talks about where God was made manifest, incarnate, in the Gospels. Okay, so this could be stories of the wise men, for instance. This could be stories of him turning the water into wine. Just these signs that showed that Jesus was God. And that's what Epiphany was for. And so out of Epiphany grows one of those situations, which was Christmas. The birth of Christ. And so Epiphany kind of grew from the Eastern Church and went west, and Christmas then developed from the Western side of the church and then came east.
Nathan, yep. What is Epiphany?
I have no idea. What like, what do they even do? What's the celebration like?
It kind of goes with the name Epiphany. So, like, it's where you realize, oh, this is the Christ. You know, this is God. So when he's, like, turning the water into wine, these are, like, miracles he does, feeding the 5,000. These would be different stories that they would go over at those times.
Yeah.
Along with the wise men. Why are they coming? Because he's the king of the Jews. Like, these different times where it's showing who Christ is, sort of these revelation moments in the Gospels. And so that's what Epiphany was for. And so some churches, like I said, do still do that. I'm pretty sure, like, the Nazarene Church, I think, does. And probably the Catholic Church and others do as well. But out of that then grew more feasts and stuff like that throughout the calendar year. And they created these feasts and festivals as a way of sort of like a calendar creed. So the point of these festivals was a way of education for the Christian as to what is Orthodox, what is the right stories, what is the right things that we follow as Christians. And so as you went throughout this calendar year, you would retell these stories. And, you know, in the early church time, you know, you have a lot of poor class people make up the church. They don't have access to the scriptures, to the writings, to education, to all these different things. And so they wouldn't be able to read these stories like we can today. We can read the Christmas story anytime we want, whereas they couldn't. And so they depended upon these, as well as, you know, there'd be art, images, like the fish, the ichthus, like you're saying these creeds, the songs that they would write. These are all things to help educate your Christian community through any way you could. And one of the ways was through the calendar year. And now the main reason December 25th is picked is because that is the winter solstice time. And that connects with the summer solstice, which was reserved for John the Baptist's birth. So John the Baptist's birth and Jesus are connected in their calendar year. And this was to represent that as you move towards Christmas, the days were getting shorter from John the Baptist's birth. And that's because to remind the Christians that John said that I must become less so Christ can become more. And so that was the teaching in that whole calendar setup. And so then when you get to Christ's birth, from that point on, the days are going to get longer as, you know, the Son of Righteousness has come into the world. And so there's a lot around why they pick these times and the meaning and the way it's supposed to educate your Christian community.
And that's cool because Elizabeth was 6 months along when Mary knew that she was pregnant. So June to December.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow.
There you go. Yep. And over time, there became even more holidays, you know, about everything. And it was a way of teaching, you know. Yeah. And they used whatever means they could. And this was one of them. And the Advent that we do today, that's an early church thing. Comes from the 500s. Pope Gregory starts it.
And
Gregory, yeah. Why? What is that?
I'm just picturing just Pope Greg.
Greg.
Yep.
Gregory.
Gregorian chant. Not the Greg chant.
And so that's why we have Advent. You know, the four Sundays before Christmas. That started all the way back then. And these are just different ways to keep this in the Christians' minds as to what it means and all that stuff. Yeah. So it has nothing to do with pagan whatever or trying to copy the sun god or something like that. It's just crazy.
Yeah. All right. So that was our countdown, our five Christmas lies. We ruined Christmas.
Hopefully nobody's too devastated.
No, really, really,
they shouldn't be.
The last one gives me a lot of hope that the fact that a lot of what we believe is based off truth and some really neat traditions the church put in place to help us learn scripture better.
Yeah.
To learn the word of God.
Yep.
All right, so our last thing is we wanted to talk about kind of how Christians should celebrate Christmas. I can't talk today, but that's okay. So, you know, for me, like, growing up in a Santa household, and my story of Santa literally was, I remember I was, like, in third grade, and I was in the hallway. I remember this, and I remember a kid telling me that there was no Santa, and I was devastated. Like, and I wanted to prove him wrong. I wanted to argue. I was angry.
You're wrong.
Yes.
You're wrong.
I saw his footprint by a tree last year. I mean, like, seriously, I wanted to scream and yell at him. Like, that's crap. And really, there's this interesting thing on YouTube where it's called Santa Syndrome. They kind of make fun of the fact the lead atheist, a lot of their videos, they bring up Santa Claus is when they dumped God.
Okay.
Like, that was the moment they dumped God. Is like the moment they realized there was no Santa. And they all say this. They kind of make fun of it. They call it Santa Syndrome.
Okay.
So Santa like ruins that for them. I don't know how legit that is.
They become skeptics. They become skeptics
right when they get told there is no Santa. Now, even looking at the facts of the Saint Nick connection, there isn't much. Yeah. In my mind, as Christians, we probably should dump Santa Claus. No, there's nothing wrong with finding a good story about Saint Nick, but even that is very tradition-based or legend-based.
Yeah, so, sort of just doesn't make sense.
No, like, it doesn't.
Why do we do that? Like, it doesn't make any sense to what the holiday's supposed to be about. Or,
right.
You know, if it's supposed to be about Jesus coming in, you know, the light of the world coming in, and, you know, this new kingdom and stuff like that, what does Santa Claus have to do with that? It's just like... I mean, there's no real point to it as to why we do that.
I mean, we do it because it's fun, and they say it's, like, going to ruin our children if we don't.
Yeah.
I literally had family members telling me that we're ruining our children's, like...
Yeah, their childhood memories.
Yeah, it's over. We're doing this, yeah.
Good job. Good job, Mike.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep.
Thank you. So, yep, we chose that before I did this podcast, so I guess we made the decision a long time ago that Santa was gone. But, I mean, it's just really, if you haven't had children yet, you have to make that decision, is if you're going to let this lie. And really, should we lie to our children? Probably not. It's really not a good thing to teach them.
Yeah, it's probably not good.
No. No. You know, be careful with, like, what you believe with Christmas, because, you know, don't go down a rabbit hole and then... like, demonize everybody around you because you believe some weird thing.
Yeah, this happens a lot, that some, you know, secular professor in some school somewhere says something. And it's like, well, you know, you need to look into what's the actual evidence. You know, just because such and such happens close to another thing, that doesn't mean that there's any correlation between the two. I mean... that's like going to another country and being like, oh, you know, they have a holiday that is in the same month as Christmas, so therefore that's where we got our holiday from. You know, like, why does that make sense? Why is that a bombshell type argument? And it's like, you know, we should be a little more thorough in what we're, you know, going to believe and whether we're going to jump ship or not. On something. I mean, it is good to be skeptical of things and to really dig in and have some evidence for, you know, what you believe and why. But just because somebody told you something, you know, or picked an obscure verse or something, it's like, see, you know, this has to do with something, you know, that's of a much later date, you know, that's a little weird. But
yeah, I would say the biggest negative of Christmas, though, in our culture, is the consumerism.
Yep.
And everybody participates in this. We're all buying tons of gifts for each other, and we're all receiving tons of gifts. It's really not... I mean, it's a sinful practice for us to be wasting money like this. I participate in this. I'll say, like, this is something I'd probably fall into sin in, because we spend a lot of money in Christmas.
Do you really love your children, Mike?
I guess I love them too much. We buy them a lot of stuff. We try to cut back on that, but we never, I mean, even cutting back is still too much.
Yeah.
We still get way too into this.
Yep.
And it's hard because there's deals everywhere. You're shopping on Amazon. You're shopping on Black Friday. Yep. And then after Black Friday, all the way up till Christmas, there's deals. Mm-hmm. And you get those ads in front of you all the time. And so you always just have to keep buying things. And then you have to be equal with your kids in your mind. So you buy this amount of gifts for one kid. And then if you buy one more for one kid, then you have to buy one more for the rest of the kids. And then you just spend a lot of money, and then you're broke, and you're wondering why you can't pay your bills. No. it can be bad. And that's, I think, something we need to be careful with when we're celebrating Christmas is how much we spend.
Yeah, again, I think it's just focusing on what's the point of this holiday. Yeah. Like, and is what we're doing, you know, helping to focus towards that goal, towards that point of whatever the holiday is that you're at. I mean, same thing with like Easter or these different holidays. What are we doing? You know, and is that helping, you know, get the point across that we're trying to make of what this holiday's about? And if it's not, you know, I think it should be taken out. If it's just being an obstacle or something that's standing in the way of what's the point, you know, then it needs to be taken out. Because, you know, this is a big deal. You know, this is our king, the king of the universe, the savior of the world. And this is the time when we remember, like, the grace that God showed us in bringing him into human history to change everything. And if that's not being understood, you know, to the Christian community, then I think there's something wrong, you know, there. And I think that needs to be changed. For me personally, if I'm out, like, by stores or something close to Christmas, it's usually, like, super depressing to my soul. Like, when I'm watching, like, the mass, like, obsessive consumerism, like, buying just cheesy, like, dollar junk or something. You know, just the junk everybody's putting in. It's almost like instant trash items, right? These things are probably going to be thrown away in, like, a year or less. And and everybody's piling up to get this stuff. And it's just like, you know, you feel like nobody's celebrating Christmas when you're out there. You're like, dude, does anybody even, like, think about Jesus?
I guess I'll have to return the that Snuggie I bought you. I really didn't buy you one.
I feel so warm.
Don't return it.
Please.
Yeah, it's sometimes depressing time of year. Just because of seeing that, yeah.
I will say, the more I learn the truth, Christmas isn't as fun when you kind of do throw away some of these traditions.
Yeah.
It does lose away. You start to be kind of bitter around that time of year. And it's
what's,
like,
the point of this?
Yeah.
Just to read the Christmas story?
That's right.
That's not fun.
That's right. Well, I mean, I remember the first time I went to church, I was excited about Christmas. It was something I could relate to. I'm like, all right, I know some songs.
Yep.
I know the story.
Yeah, I can jump into this.
But then I realized every Christmas for like 6 weeks, the church goes in all Christmas mode.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm so tired of this.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, guys. Can we, like, just maybe do for like 1 week, do the Christmas story, have the kids come do their play? Does it have to start in the mid-November? Am I the only one who feels this way? It's like, come on. Sorry. And then the radio stations, it's all Christmas music for like 2 months.
I think they're getting better about starting after Thanksgiving, though. Okay. I noticed, but maybe it's just because I don't have to listen to the radio so much because I have a cell phone.
Yeah,
I got a cool.
What's a radio?
That's right. You can listen to listen to our podcast.
Yeah,
you'll never have to listen to the radio again. All right, so it's been fun. We want to thank you guys. It's about the end of the year. This is probably our last podcast. You'll be hearing more podcasts regarding the widow, the orphan, and the foreigner, because we did five parts to that one. So we
was it five or four?
I think it was five. Five parts. We've already put two of them online, so next week we'll put the third one up.
Okay.
And into the new year. And I think the next pod, I'm thinking, Nathan doesn't know this yet, the next podcast might be just a Q&A podcast.
Oh.
We've had questions asked.
Yeah.
About the last, like, 10 podcasts we've done. And I thought we would just answer those questions.
There we go. Sounds good.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks, Heather, for joining us.
Oh, no problem. Yeah,
thanks, wife.
This is much more fun with Heather around. So thanks for joining us for our podcast.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. Let's bring on the Christmas music.
Let's get in our sleigh. Oh, yes. Oh, it's so nice. Yeah. Sure thing.
That's right.
Yay.
Reindeer.